Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
The Athletic.
Happy New Year. Welcome to 2024. It's the year of Marc Márquez racing a Ducati, of Pedro Acosta's MotoGP debut, and of MotoGP's longest ever season. And oh, well, I've just realized Simon's closed his eyes as I said MotoGP's longest ever season. So that's starting as we mean to go on.
That was completely involuntary as well. That just happened.
I think he was just banking some sleep now at the start of this podcast, knowing how little he'll get when the 2024 racing calendar begins.
I've got my first invite to a 2024 MotoGP event already, and it's in January. So, like, the calendar starts early. We've just been sitting eating dinner, complaining about how, you know, other industries take some time off over Christmas and the New Year, but it hasn't really been the case for MotoGP. It's been fairly intense, but there you go. Such is life.
Yeah,
gives us lots to talk about.
It does. It does feel like a short off season this year, with it running as late into November as it did. And also, I think because there's so many storylines kind of on the cusp of like coming to reality with all the rider and team moves, it's making winter feel even shorter in a way that's quite nice for anticipation, but maybe not great for rest. As you have gathered, this is the Race MotoGP podcast, and we're going to start with some full disclosure. Simon Patterson, Valentin Hurinci, and myself, Matt Beer, we are not recording this in the early hours of the morning of January 1st, 2024. We are actually banking this one for you in the final part of December 2023, so wish us well in getting the year right throughout the rest of this episode, especially because as much as I love Simon and Val and enjoy working with them, Val has a slight reputation for turning up to work on the wrong day, and Simon and deadlines aren't the best of friends. So time, days, a bit of an issue anyway. But as far as we're concerned, this year is now 2024. Last year was 2023. So let's see how we do with that during the next hour. Val, how do you think you'll get on with that one?
I'll fail immediately. I don't have a lot of faith in myself on this particular one.
So regular listeners, you'll know that we've got into a habit lately of ending our post-race episodes with a Larry prediction about some elements of the race afterwards. So what a better way to start 2024 than with a whole host of Larry predictions about what might come in the season ahead. Now, you can predict some sort of straightforward things like champion, number of race winners, that kind of thing. We're going to save those precise predictions for after preseason testing, when we've got a more realistic idea of the nitty-gritty of how the season might look. We're going big picture stuff. So our first one that we're going to get onto in this episode is the question, which rider or team do you think will have a significantly better 2024 than 2023? And I've asked these two, hopefully these two haven't converged, to make sure they're not going to give the same or different answers. So I'm hoping they can like gazump each other a few times. Simon, odd or even, because I'm going to throw a large dice to decide who goes first.
Odd.
Okay. Johnny, look forward to the dice sound effect. It's a real large dice on my desk. There we go. It's the number one, Simon.
I think in the year 2024, 99% of people would use like a dice app on your phone. So the fact Matt used an actual
the fact
pair
that
of
dice. Matt had an actual dice to hand to use is quite impressive.
How does anyone make a decision without a dice? I don't get it. So, Simon, which rider or team do you think will have a significantly better 2024 than 2023?
I actually think that we're going to see Yamaha looking quite a bit stronger next year. This year. There we go. I did it in the first answer. This year. Yamaha have been, they've been building into something. 2023 looked like a complete disaster mainly because they didn't win anything. But I think whenever you look behind the scenes, they weren't actually that far away. And we know exactly where they're struggling. We know where the weakness of the bike is. It's this, you know, immediate corner acceleration issue where they're not able to get up to speed. And then they're conceding a ton of speed in a straight line because of it. So it's something that in theory is fixable. It's something that Yamaha know how to fix. And we're going into a new season now where they've suddenly got a massive advantage in this area specifically because of the new concessions. So it means that they can tinker with their aerodynamics. It means they can tinker with their engine specification during the season. It means that they can test all those things with the race riders. And on top of that, it also means that, you know, they can now go and not only test with the racers, they've got a new racer to test with. They've got Alex Rins coming into the team, who is, I think everyone is expecting him to be super strong, super competitive. He knows how to ride an inline four MotoGP bike really, really quickly because he's won races at Suzuki. And I think he's probably just a little bit more motivated than Franco Morbidelli has been for the latter half of the 2023 season. I think it's hard for a rider to be fully committed to any project whenever they know they're leaving. Rins has a huge point to prove because he essentially spent all of last year sitting on the sidelines watching because of injury. And there's, you know, I think there's lots of reasons, lots of little reasons, maybe rather than one big reason, why the whole Yamaha package next year for me should be a little bit better. I did an interview in Qatar at the penultimate round of 23 with Aprilia boss Massimo Rivola. And one of the most interesting points I thought that he made out of the interview was that, you know, it looks while kind of mourning that everyone was going to get concessions for 24, mourning saying that, you know, if you took Ducati out of the picture, the Yamaha wouldn't actually have been that far away. They were quite close to KTM and Aprilia. It's just that there was eight red bikes, you know, getting in the way every weekend. And while obviously you have to beat all of those Ducatis as well as everyone else to win races and championships, if the concessions can help them maybe neuter Ducati a little bit, then Yamaha don't have a huge amount of sort of ground to make up for me.
Val, were you going to pick Yamaha as well, or just want to argue with Simon on this one first?
Well, I was going to pick Yamaha, but it was a little bit annoying because my plan was to pick Fabio Quartararo, and I was going to do a whole spiel about how it would be cheating to pick any of the riders who were injured, basically, because they'll have a better year. It would be cheating to pick somebody like Joan Mir, because I don't think Joan Mir can have a worse year than he had. At least it's on the very low scale of probability. So my pick was just going to be Fabio Quartararo. I think Yamaha should be slightly better. He should be in a slightly better headspace now that he's more accustomed to the realities of a questionable Yamaha. And also maybe there's just the chance that by that point in the season, he'll already have a contract with somebody else in his pocket, which is maybe jumping ahead a little bit further into the episode. But yeah, I expect him to be more competitive out of the blocks, and I think he already gained some decent-ish momentum closing out the season and started regularly defeating Franco Morbidelli again. There was a pretty noticeable swing in that teammate battle between the first half of the season and the second half of the season. Morbidelli largely attributed it to qualifying, and maybe so, but qualifying's the key for Yamaha. That's the problem. So if that's where Fabio is sorting things out again and doing more again, then it's easy for me to back him to have a better season.
I'm glad you went for Quartararo specifically, because this is my biggest question mark over Yamaha. Is I don't really know what Quartararo we were seeing in most of 2023, really. Franco Morbidelli was a very strange benchmark because Morbidelli was just not the Morbidelli we saw at his very best. Quartararo was, you know, permanently furious. The amount of debates we had over the season where he'd do a post-race debrief and would go, that sounds ferociously angry, actually. Was he just that angry last week? Is he being angry in a new way this week? Is he worth quoting? Actually, no, he's been that angry for the last 6 months. He's not actually tipped the scale this time. Oh, he has this time? Great. So I wasn't sure with his performances because the Yamaha, just only two Yamahas, and one was off the pace regardless because Morbidelli wasn't stunning. Was Quartararo getting the absolute most out of that bike? Was he checking out a little bit at times, or was just the sheer frustration of it making him not perform at his very best? Because it was, yeah, I just found him almost impossible to judge. So if the Yamaha does come out of the blocks clearly better, I'm certain we'll see something different from Quartararo. But I wonder how much better it it has to be to really, yeah, how much has he already committed? Like you say, we will get onto potential rider moves later in this episode, but I wonder how much Yamaha can do to convince him. Does it have enough time, given how early the silly season will start, to move? And if it's not looking significantly better in the tests, what kind of Quartararo do we get at the opening round? That's probably the question mark for me about Yamaha.
Yeah, you could just do the start of this season again. And, you know, it does feel like maybe we're a little bit overly harsh on Fabio and questioning his, you know, mindset and motivation. But honestly, it's also something that he's acknowledged repeatedly, that he wasn't entirely in the right headspace to start the season. It's something Yamaha has repeatedly pointed to. It's clearly a factor understood in the team as a potential explanation for why the inter-team picture changed as much as it did, along with, you know, obviously Franco Morbidelli improving from the nadirs of the previous year. I mean, that was also part of it. But yeah, I think this is not the most interesting pick, because I don't expect a massive breakout season or anything like that for Fabio Quartararo. He's already had his breakout season. Had yeah. Two of them. He's had many of them. He's been good. But it's, I think he will be markedly more competitive, and at least in the hunt for race wins at certain tracks, which for me will represent a considerable step.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree on that. It became really strange during the course of 2023 to get used to Yamaha being where it was and just not think anything odd about the results he was getting. You know, when he was finishing lower top 10, that was often quite good, and to not be shocked by that when you saw it on the timing screen just, yeah, still felt a little strange even deep into the season. I guess the other question mark I have about Yamaha is, okay, concessions should make a difference now, but an awful lot of Yamaha's woes you can trace right back to the Valentino Rossi, Jorge Lorenzo years, things they complain about cropped up again with Maverick Vinales, with Fabio Quartararo, with Franco Morbidelli. Has Yamaha learned enough about what it's got wrong over these years to make good use of the concessions? Or, you know, it can have all the time, development time in the world, but it was still going down blind alleys and not adapting to what the European-based manufacturers have worked out a modern MotoGP bike needs, then that time's going to be wasted.
Yes, I think that they finally have. And that's something both from new hires and from the noises coming from inside the team. We've already seen them bring in former Toyota and F1 engine builder Luca Marmarini to head up the engine development program. There's some rumors floating around at the minute that they've just poached, they've followed the KTM strategy and just poached a Gigi Delinea protege from Ducati, which seems to be the way to make your MotoGP bike better if you're not Ducati at the minute. And you know, talking to Quartararo in particular, actually, things inside the team seem to have moved. They seem to have kind of broken that Japanese mentality of doing things and decided that, you know, the only way to do things a bit different or a bit better is to be a bit different, which is what we've seen with others in the past. It's, you know, I still think it's a huge part of the reason why Suzuki was so strong, because they didn't have a traditional Japanese mentality towards MotoGP in a lot of ways. And if Yamaha have made that transition, it's the perfect time to do it, because they now go into this new 24 season with, you know, the ability to use concessions to really make up time as quick as possible, because they've got the tools, the people, and the opportunity. Whereas, you know, if they'd done this last year, they would have had two of those three things, but they wouldn't have had the opportunity. I think from everything we've heard, there's something, we're going to see something different from Iwata this season.
I did think when I put this question on the list that whoever went first would obviously go for Marc Marquez. Have you not gone for Marc Marquez because you're just trying to be too interesting?
Yes.
Correct answer.
Yeah, I wrote him off immediately as like, it's just too obvious and there's nothing to say really. He's, you know, he's healed up and going to a much better bike.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't fit the criteria of the question in that the expectation is super high.
Yeah. I'd have, you know, if either of you start with Mark, I nearly in the notes was going to say except Mark Marquez because that's too obvious. So I'm proud of you both for going for the non-obvious. Let's see how non-obvious the next one can get. Which rider or team will have a significantly worse 2024 than 2023? And I think I could just roll the giant dice again, but I'm going to say, Val, it's your turn. We'll just alternate. So, Val, you get first pick.
Yeah, I think there's an obvious pick that I am not going to go for, but I am going to disclose anyway as to what I consider the obvious pick. I think Johan Zarco is the obvious pick. He's going from a factory spec Ducati that he knows very well to a factory spec, but we'll see what kind of factory spec Honda that he doesn't know very well that is a Honda. So I don't expect him to finish fifth in the championship or sixth in the championship or anything like that. I don't think that's on the cards, but that's the obvious one. So the problem here with figuring out a good answer for this is, first of all, we just get excited about riders, I think, and about the glimpses of potential they show. And when we look at them, we think, well, surely, you know, this guy isn't going to spend the whole season injured. This guy is going to know his bike better. This guy has more experience. This guy, it will just have a better bike from his manufacturer because there's no way Honda and Yamaha will continue to be what they have been, right? So, but it's a zero-sum game. So those improvements have to come at the expense, relatively speaking, of, you know, average performance on everybody else's side, which is why my rider pick is 2023 world champion Pecco Bagnaia.
Okay, so I was thinking as the hour went on with your preamble and that question that this had better be good when you get to the point. And yeah, well played. So yeah, now justify it, but you've earned the right to not have that 37-minute intro edited out when Johnny does the edit.
Bagnaia is very good. I have been a proponent this entire time, basically. I think if people consider that I'm needlessly negative on Bagnaia at some points, they don't remember the fact that I was blown away immediately when he started in the Ducati factory team. I think he's still going to be great. I think his strengths will still remain his strengths, his diligence, his, you know, race smarts, all of that. I just don't think he'll win the title. And I think that for me will be the significantly worse portion of it. I think I didn't like the way the late season trend went last year, and I think next year is going to be harder. And I think there will be too many hurdles for him to overcome the problems that he's had this year if those problems at all resurface again. I think next year, if you want to win the championship, you can't be flirting with Q1 on Friday. I think he's going to be really good. I think this is not me to suggest that suddenly, oh, the fraud's going to be exposed or whatever. That's ridiculous. But I don't think he'll win the title. My suspicion is it will be just harder, and that will look like a climb down. But again, it's that whole principle of if riders are fitter, if other bikes are better, then the zero-sum game has to, you know, the sum has to be achieved from somebody else. I'm sorry, Pecco. Well, he doesn't care. Why do I say I'm sorry? But yeah, I'm sorry, Pecco fans, if this does bother you, but that's, you know, that's the reasoning.
Simon, I'm assuming your pick will be different, but what is your take on Val's?
I want to wait and see. I get where Val's coming from, but I think that I think that what we saw from Bagnaia in the past few seasons is that he's become remarkably resilient, and I think he's quite good at kind of weathering storms, which is what he did in the 23 season. And for me, the problem with saying that he had a weak final half of the season is that I think you can kind of trace everything back to that crash in Barcelona. I think once that huge crash happened, that was when the wheels come off a bit, and it just took him a long time to kind of get his act back together. And in the meantime, Jorge Martin was able to build a load of momentum. And I think there was a bit of crossover as a result of that, where it looked like one of them was a lot stronger than the other for the final third, really, of the season. So, yeah, I think maybe Bagnaia has more to give. I think he's got more to show us yet, because if you remember his 22 championship winning season, it took him all of the first half of the season to get up to speed, and then he put in this, you know, this amazing sort of final push against Fabio Quartararo to win the title. So effectively, we've now seen him win two championships without putting together a complete season. And I think if things go semi according to plan in 24, he has the opportunity then to to do that, if he can start strong and maintain it without any, you know, massive setbacks like the big Barcelona fall and everything that came with it, then there's you know, there's more to come from him. There's more for us to see of his potential.
I do approve of the fact that we're working so hard to get the year right that both of you have now kind of put us in 2025 accidentally in different answers in the last 5 minutes, which is great. At least we're not in 2023. But yeah, I see where you're coming from, Simon, on that one. I think I am slightly more in camp Val on this one because, yes, there was the crash and he carried an injury that he could race with, but that was debilitating for quite a while. Yes, there was that period around India where there was something with the setup that was bothering him as well, and he was sensitive to that. My doubt is, in the end, because of the things Martin got wrong, because of that particular costly crash, because of the weird tyre that may or may not have been a weird tyre, because of the Phillip Island gamble, Bagnaia could, in the end, win the title by just being him. He could just go, okay, my main rival is ultimately a lunatic, and even if he's being faster than me, he's going to let enough slip that I just have to stick to my way of going racing and this will be okay. But if Martin doesn't have one of those blips and Martin goes into the last few races with, say, a 20-point lead, which was very, very possible had he not stamped on his own toes a few times, then did Bagnaia have the speed to come back at him and beat him with raw pace? And that's the bit where I'm like, something was missing for me there. And I wouldn't say I thought Martin threw the title away, and I certainly wouldn't say Bagnaia inherited it, but we didn't. There was an element that Bagnaia didn't have to do because Martin tripped himself over, basically. And that's a bit. I'm curious to see how that goes in another title fight, potentially against Marc Marquez.
That is part of my reasoning. I think it was never. And when I say on the back foot, I mean in terms of the championship picture specifically. I think he was never on the back foot massively for a prolonged period of time. And I think 2024 has certain ingredients that suggest that there might be that situation.
Okay, next question. Simon's turn to go first this time. Who will be the first rider to commit to a 2025 team switch during the 2024 season? Now, MotoGP has got very good over the years at very early announcements. You know, COVID season 2020, we had quite a few people sacked for the following year, in some cases before they even raced for the team that they were about to race with. But even before that, we got very used to deals for the next year being announced around the time of the season opener. So with so many riders out of contract and so much movement likely, Simon, who is going to declare their jumping ship first and how early?
I don't think we're going to see an announcement coming super, super early, in that this is not going to be like previous seasons where people are announcing things before the championship even starts, because there's too much set to change this year with the concessions, with two manufacturers who should be better on the back foot, with Ducati's crazy problem of having too many riders to slot into places, and with KTM's issue of needing to see what Pedro Acosta does. So there's a lot of factors to play. But I think the first announcement that we're going to see next year will be the news that Jorge Martin is going somewhere else apart from Ducati.
Oh.
Because the more I listen to him talk, the more I hear what he has to say about his future, the more I'm convinced that it's not in Bologna. Because he just sounds like someone that's been shunned and scorned by the factory. And I don't think that's necessarily the case, but you know, when he's saying maybe my future lies elsewhere, at the same time as Paolo Ciabatti is saying things like, or you know, one of our prime targets for a factory seat for 2025 is Marc Marquez, then I think Martin's going to take that as yet another slight whenever he's already aggrieved, and he's going to go looking elsewhere. Because he's going to look at the other bikes in the grid, I think, and believe that there's no reason why he can't win championships somewhere else as well as Ducati. Because we're getting close to being back to that point now where you don't have to be in a Ducati to win championships. And you know, I think that there's a very real possibility that either the Honda looks stronger at the start of this season, and that he considers going there, and they immediately sack off Joan Mir because they will do anything they can to get back to winning ways, just in the same way as Marc Marquez did when he left Honda. Or We'll get an announcement fairly early on that Aleix Espargaró is going to call it a day at the end of the 24 season, and then immediately kind of semi-appoint his best mate to join the team, the way that he kind of semi-appointed one of his other best mates, Maverick Viñales, to join the team a few years ago. I think that one of those two options for me is now looking more and more likely for Martin.
I think there's solid reasoning behind that. Val, before your pick, agree or disagree with Simon's logic?
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, it's hard to map out a particularly convincing scenario in my head because every time I just change my mind. But I do see it how the fact that Ducati does not need to take an early decision on 2025, but I suspect Jorge Martin would quite like it to, because he would quite like a show of faith and an early show of faith. I think those two situations are potentially on a collision course. And I mean, a lot will depend on the patience showed by Jorge Martin, but I don't think, in terms of being wanted, it's not just him. I just don't think MotoGP riders are very patient when it comes to that. Just show me I'm your first choice. Jorge Martin would sign a works 2025 Ducati deal right now, I suspect, if it was offered. I'm pretty convinced. And every minute that it's not offered is going to feel like a little bit of an insult. So yeah, I it's very easy to see. I don't know that I put any percentages on it, but it's real easy to see. As I alluded to before, again, this is a Larry predictions episode, so I haven't really thought this through because I don't know what the alternatives are. They don't really make a lot of sense in my head, but somebody has to just swoop in and rescue Fabio Quartararo from his current situation. And yeah, I think he's spent the entirety of the previous year, which is also this current year, which is the previous year, setting the...
What?
Setting the stage.
That didn't even
setting
make sense.
Setting the stage. It didn't. No, not at all.
Most of what Val says but doesn't,
let's,
to be fair.
Let's hope that the rest of this is slightly more cogent. I think he spent much of 2023 setting the stage for... Yeah, basically telling other MotoGP factories, come and get me. I'm here. I'm really good. You've seen what I can do. I'm still as good as I looked then. Offer me something good. He's also, you know, he's had a management situation change. He's now sort of, I don't think he's managing himself, but he's rearranged his management structure and split with his longtime manager. I think that's in preparation of a very active free agency period. Yeah, he might wait a bit, but it also, there are factories in MotoGP that would be smart to try to blow him away with a big, big money offer, which Yamaha will also try to do. But let's say the Honda out of the blocks looks better than the Yamaha out of the blocks. That might be enough. That might do it. I think that might do it. So, yeah, Fabio Quartararo, I think, will be my pick again.
I love the prospect of a recent world champion and a 2023 near miss title contender being the first people to be jumping ship from their current teams. And I think you have both hit the nail on the head with how likely, you know, those two prospects are. Jorge Martin's whole personality is like a massive outbreaking maneuver. You know, we've talked on previous episodes about, you know, how he's got a kind of, you know, an arrogance, a kind of, the snubs he feels from Ducati are very single-minded on his side. But of course, he's a MotoGP rider. He's got to top a MotoGP. You need that kind of character. He has it to what seems from the outside like a bit of an extreme, but I kind of love him for it. And I think it's the kind of character we need. This is one of those things where, again, we've talked a few times about how the order in which episodes and articles might run is a bit jumbled around Christmas and New Year because everyone's getting things in the bank. So possibly by the time you hear this episode, Simon will have written a column about how Jorge Martin could be the villain that MotoGP really needs right now. So you may have read that already. You might read it very soon if it hasn't actually run by the time this episode does. But that will be worth the read because I think it's a very interesting point. And Quartararo, you know, like we alluded to earlier in the episode, every media debrief he did for most of 2023 was like, hey there, come and get me. I'm still cross. Have you noticed? I'm still really angry. It was so many of them we felt at the time he was trying to just keep himself in everyone's mind so that the rest of the paddock knew he was, you know, up for grabs basically. And yeah, to a degree, fair enough. The other contender for this was potentially Marc Marquez, I guess, given that it is thought that Gresini in particular, Ducati, is a stopgap in a way. But I do think that situation has moved on with both the Honda looking good at the test and Simon's point that Honda and Mark could reunite one day. Also, when he did sign for Gresini, that was seen as very much a stopgap. But some of the noises coming out of Ducati hierarchy around this have made me wonder if Ducati would be less keen to lose Marquez after just 1 year, especially if he starts being excellent immediately. I think there's a fight and a bit of decision on Marquez's side. Basically, anywhere apart from Yamaha is going to be an option for him. He is Marc Marquez. He can afford to take his time.
He's emphasized so much about how he just wants to feel himself again in terms of the competitive picture, how he wants to rediscover being out front in MotoGP week in, week out. I think that in the early rounds will take priority over figuring out a plan for 2025. But also, it's just... in his case, it's going to be, I guess we'd call it a seller's market, I guess. I suspect there's no reason to commit early. There will always be a good place for Marc Marquez. So unless somebody comes in immediately, like right now, at this time of year, with this huge money offer, that's like take it or leave it, because we'll also sound out other people, but we'd like to secure you right now. And if it's the kind of offer to where it offsets the financial losses he will have taken from splitting with Honda and tearing up the final year of his big money contract. Maybe. I mean, I'm not his accountant, so I don't know if that's something that needs doing. He's said a lot of times that it's not about earning money. He has enough money, but when people have a lot of money, sometimes that money's tied up in some stuff, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes you want more. So if that enters into consideration, then I think it could be Marc Marquez, but from purely sporting,
I think if we learned one thing from 2023, it's that Marc Marquez has all of the power in the rider market, because he essentially kept us waiting until the day of the penultimate day of the entire season to find out who the 2024 grid was going to comprise of, because of his wranglings at Gresini that pushed Fabio Di Giantonio out and created all this subsequent mess. Everyone plays his game when it comes to the rider market, and that'll be absolutely no different next year.
And especially in the situation last year where he was under contract, and at the time that he started getting more desperate at Honda, there was absolutely no obvious place for him to go with how tied up everywhere else was. And yet, we're in the situation we are in now. And that, you're absolutely right. That was from the sheer audacious power of Marc Marquez. Even the Marc Marquez who has not won a race for quite a while and has finished absolutely nowhere in some championships recently, he can still make the rest of the paddock kind of dance to his tune on that front. Next question: which manufacturer will be the first to show a benefit from the new concession system? You can quantify benefit how you like in this. To me, it's like a significant step forward in what they're doing. Who's gonna progress quickly? Val, you get first answer on this one. Who have you gone for?
I'm going to say very sort of unconvincingly and mildly, I'm going to say Honda, because the ingredients there just make sense to me as those that could benefit from concessions. I think it's too race riders that it will have on the bike are ones who will more benefit from the allowance to go testing outside of the designated testing sessions. I think if Honda does make use of it, and it has the resources, it has the facilities, it might not have the time in the calendar year, but I think they'll figure it out. So that's, getting Joan Mir more acclimatized with various things in the new Honda, and just generally getting Luca Marini more acclimatized, I think that should pay off in how they use it. Even the Sepang shakedown should pay off. And Aero, I think they'll test Aero quite extensively with its race riders in the race weekends. Is it two Aero homologations now for yeah. So I think they'll make considerable use of that. And that's just my reasoning. But I don't think it'll be, like, the more I think about the concessions, they're obviously very good. They're quite a nifty system. There's a lot of breaks there, but there's nothing that's like a game breaker, I don't think. So I think it'll be marginal, whatever it provides. And it's, if the new Honda is good, if it's as good as it looked in Valencia, then, it's already become this without the concessions. So the concessions are for finishing touches in a way.
Simon, are you in the Honda camp there as well, or have you got a different answer?
I've got a different answer, but it's kind of arguing semantics of the question, because the manufacturer that's immediately going to benefit the most, I think, is KTM, because the fact that they've now got six wild cards kind of solves the Paul Espargaro problem that they backed themselves into last year, because suddenly he can do six races, or he can do four races, and they can still bring Danny Pedrosa twice. And I think in terms of immediate problem solving, the fact that they've got six wild cards solves one of their big problems very rapidly.
Do you think, which came first here, actually? Because the extra wild cards for KTM was being mooted quite early on, wasn't it, as a way to solve a different problem. Do you think that made Dorna and the FIM go, oh, hang on, we've got an idea here. We could expand this and turn it into a new concessions KTM's bonus.
KTM's considerable talk about how they supply bikes to 60% of the entire Grand Prix field probably gave them a bit of a bargaining chip whenever it came to like negotiating what exactly every team would take from the concessions. So I think they knew pretty early on in the process that, you know, what would happen. I mean, we found out at the about the concessions after the season ended, when we were in Valencia for the post-race test. But whenever we asked Marc Marquez about it, he said that he had known what the concessions were going to be before he announced his move to Gresini. So this is obviously something that's been, you know, fairly heavily internally debated among the teams for quite some time. So I think it was sort of KTM's Hail Mary to get them out of a problem early on in the season, or earlier on in the season, whenever it came to breaking contracts.
I had to say as well, so I did think at the outset, should we do a quick summary of what the concessions are at the start of this question? When you see them kind of written down, it's like, whoa, okay, that's a complicated set of tiers and things. As a shorthand summary for any listeners who haven't really gone through them in depth yet, it's basically if you have been not very good, you get quite a lot more stuff, but not a crazy amount of stuff. So that's my shorthand for it. So it's effectively is more development time. Race riders can do some testing, but it's like you say, it's not like they suddenly get all the freedom in the world, but there's enough to make a difference. And it's not as kind of black and white as the old system where a certain number of podiums would knock you out of getting concessions. This whole tier and percentages thing is a bit more of an ongoing boost, perhaps, that you're not going to lose if you suddenly get a few freak results.
I should say that obviously there's also a good Yamaha specific argument in the concessions for why it should benefit, and it ties into the 2023 season and something Cal Crutchlow, the test rider, said. Cal Crutchlow suggested that the engine that they homologated for the year wasn't quite the right one, that it's the one the race riders preferred, but it wasn't the most, I don't want to say efficient, because efficient means something specific, but basically wasn't right in terms of how it delivered power. And that will not be a problem for the early stages of 2024, because if you got something homologated, well, there's no homologation for the Class D, for the Class D manufacturers, of which Yamaha is one. So they get to basically develop their engines in season, which is potentially the most significant break. But I think they're very incremental about their engine development, so I don't know that that's going to pay like early media dividends. So that's why I went for Honda.
Okay, next question. Simon's turn to lead again. Which will be the most one-sided of all the teammate battles?
I think this is going to be my hilarious prediction of the recording of the podcast.
Oh, good.
I think it's going to be the Factory Ducati team.
Ooh.
Because I'm less convinced than I have been about Enea Bastianini's potential as a factory rider.
Interesting.
When we saw Enea Bastianini at his best was 2022, whenever he was a Gresini rider, whenever he was riding essentially a two-year-old bike, because the bike hadn't changed that much during COVID. It had a ton of data. It was working super well. He had zero pressure. He had zero sort of instructions from Gresini about what he had to do. He just went out and raced the thing. I remember, I think it was Pecco Bagnaia complaining at preseason testing that year that all he had to do was put tires and fuel in the thing, and there was a huge advantage from that. And there was. And he turned it into a really, really successful 2022 season where he won, I think, four races and looked really, really strong. And then in 2023, everything kind of went the opposite direction for him. And Yeah, I absolutely. One of those big breaks in his season was because Luca Marini smashed into him at the first round and damaged his shoulder, and we saw him struggle afterwards for a long time to get back to competitiveness. But whenever he did get back in the bike, he still wasn't really there. He was still struggling. Much the same way as he kind of had been in Portimao at the start of that season as well. Before the, you know, whenever we were still testing him, before things got underway, he then got injured again through a crash that he's admitted was his own fault, because he was pushing when he shouldn't have been and did something rather stupid at Barcelona. And although he came back in the latter half of the season and won a race in Sepang right at the end of the year, he never really looked comfortable. He never really looked like he was using the strengths of the bike. And I think we're going to see that carrying forward into 2024. I think that he's maybe just not as comfortable as a factory rider as he was elsewhere. He wouldn't be the first person that we've seen something like this from in the past. I mean, look at people like Cal Crutchlow, who had a terrible 2014 season as a factory Ducati rider, and then went to LCR and immediately was comfortable and started winning races and doing, you know, really good stuff again. I think we're going to see, obviously, not as big a divide as we had in 2023 between Bastianini and Bagnaia, because hopefully Bastianini is going to be fully fit all season. But I think there's going to be quite a disparity between the two of them this season.
Val, you advocated memorably for Bastianini not to get flicked from the factory team, but do you think Simon's got a point?
Yeah, no, I think he does. I think it's a real possibility. He's not the factory Ducati is not my pick for this question, but I certainly, it would not be the biggest shock in the world if there continued to be a sizable gap between the two, especially, you know, given how established Pecco Bagnaia is in that team and continues to be, and the results he continues to bring, and how difficult Enea Bastianini's first year in Ducati Red was. So it just happens sometimes. Sometimes a rider comes into new surroundings, slightly new role, and slightly different bike, and it just doesn't work. And it's, you know, the onus is on Enea Bastianini to prove that it can work and it will work for sustained periods of time. But I don't expect a huge gap, but I certainly can't rule it out in my head. So yeah.
The thing that bothers me is what happened after the Sepang win. It made the Sepang breakthrough, which was a huge step from where he had been, but it made that look absolutely anomalous. I'm still a Bastianini faithful, I would say. I still think over the balance of his career, he has looked significantly better than he did in 2023. And sometimes riders just simply do not gel with a bike and with a situation. This will be a new Ducati that he is riding this season. Would it be new and different enough to solve the problems he had? Is he in the right headspace to solve them confidently, given that his first season of what should have been his biggest opportunity was a write-off, effectively? I'm nowhere near as confident in what we'll see from Bastianini as I was going into 2023, and I think it would take one poor race weekend or one iffy test for me to go, no, actually this has not worked, this isn't going to work, he just needs to get himself to a different team and start afresh. But as it stands, I think I'd be, my inkling is still that it's going to be closer. There's still a part of me that thinks that going into 2023 that Bastianini is good enough to give Bagnaia a real intra-team headache, and it's going to be hard for Ducati to manage, which is, I think, was completely the right expectation to have at the end of 2022. Because okay, he had a sorted bike, like you say, he didn't have to get bogged down development testing, he wasn't caught up in the which engine should we go with, Ducati, you know, Ferrago with its top spec bikes at the start of 22. But he also just kept winning races brilliantly right at the end of the season. He also had a very strong section of 2021 as well, even before he was winning races with Gresini. The guy, throughout his career, has looked pretty damn great until he got into that factory Ducati in 2023 and then broke himself repeatedly. I'm convincing myself while I'm saying this, but I still think there's a better chance of him winning five races and looking quite decent than there is of him being rubbish.
I probably shouldn't go into too much detail in my thoughts here because we do have a whole preseason to fill, but I think this format just sucks for him. Just really sucks. I think this is just the wrong fit for the guy. I think he's just not a great MotoGP qualifier, and more pertinently, probably not the most apt first lap racer as it stands. And those are two very tough things to overcome right now, as the MotoGP format is right in this moment. I think if, you know, if they just showed up at the track and the grid was a random draw and then they ran a race that was 100 laps, and then Bastianini would maybe win every single time. And I do think that, you know, once he gets to sort of lean on that strength a bit more in 2024, he will be better. But the format is just, it worries me. I don't see it as a good fit. But he did, you know, when he was fit, he did qualify decent to start the season in the one opportunity he got before the Luca Marini sprint crash injured him. So maybe I'm wrong. He has had flashes in qualifying, but just only flashes. So that's, you know, that worries me.
So who is your pick for this one-sided teammate battle then, Val?
I mean, I don't think we need to discuss this one very, very long. Jorge Martin, Frank Morbidelli, Pramac Ducati. One guy's coming off of a rough patch at Yamaha and is learning a new bike, and the other guy's the four man of the second half of the 2023 season.
Yeah, I'll accept a short answer with that. I would add to that that apart from a glorious bit of 2020, Morbidelli has generally been overshadowed by Fabio Quartararo in their time together, and I think on raw pace, Jorge Martin is probably faster than Fabio Quartararo, not by a lot, and I think Quartararo at his best is a more reliable operator, but I think in sheer kind of how fast is this person, Martin is quite hard to beat, and that's a lot for Morbidelli to go up against. So yeah, I can see that one being a bit of a whitewash as well. Our last question is a percentage one, so, you know, it should suit spreadsheet Val very, very well. What percentage of races will Ducati win in the 2024 season? Now, I was gonna suggest, should we go just for Grand Prix or should we go for all of them? But actually, the 2023 statistics makes no difference apart from a tiny bit of rounding up. Yeah. Ducati won 85% of both, and therefore 85% of the overall season. So, Val, you go first for this one. What percentage of the 2024 season's races will Ducati win?
I'd say 65. I mean, that feels correct. I don't think another season, even with the addition of Marc Marquez, I think other brands will make Ducati's life a bit harder. And also the presence of Marc Marquez will potentially sow a bit more chaos out front in the Ducati ranks, I suspect. But I still expect it to be the best bike for most of the season, and an incredibly potent rider lineup, and some tracks where it's just going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever. And obviously the constructors title sewn up by early May somehow. So yeah, so let's say a conservative 65.
Simon, what's your number?
I think Val's being very conservative. I think there's a possibility that Marc Marquez wins 65% of the races in 2024. I think it's going to be much higher. I think we're looking closer to 80% again. I think all they've done this season, as compared to last season, is add to their depth in field. They've arguably taken the weakest riders they had and replaced them with slightly stronger ones, or they've developed the people like Fabio DiGiantonio into better riders, and I think they're gonna, yeah, I would be very surprised if we don't have another season where they do very impressively. I'm hoping that changes for 2025, and I think that the concessions will change it, but I think it's gonna come, you know, the gap for Yamaha and Honda in particular to go from bad to good is massive. But to go from bad to go to good means being consistently in the podium again, and it doesn't mean consistently winning races again. So, yeah. And while KTM still could, you know, when KTM couldn't manage to win a race in 23, while Aprilia only managed to win a few, I think the odds are very definitively tipped in favor of Ducati.
So I've held back from getting too involved in Larry predictions in this episode because I think you two have covered most of them. I'm going to go high. I reckon Ducati will win 90%. I don't think it will be a worse season, but I strongly agree, Simon, with your suggestion that Honda and Yamaha need time to make the progress I think they will make, and I think the concessions will help, and I think that the rider lineup shuffles they've had will help give them the right knowledge in the right places to move forward too. But they need more time than they've got. And actually, okay, we've got a lot of racing, they've got concessions, but you know, fitting in some of these tests, you know, with their race riders will be hard as well. So I think they're a 2025 and beyond storyline. KTM and Aprilia, I think my faith has been a little bit shaken by how 2023 went for both. And like you say, KTM couldn't win a race with a very good bike. Well, yeah, a pretty good bike. Not a Ducati, but the second best bike a lot of the time. Yeah, did the rider lineup let too much slip there? Aprilia, I just need to be a bit more convinced that this team can grow into a title contender. I think what Aprilia has done to come from where it was to where it is now is absolutely superb. But the last step in motorsport is often the hardest, and Aprilia's got to convince me that it can do that. And I think it probably needs a different rider lineup to really, really cement itself as a regular title contender, which is no disrespect to the job that its current riders have done, because they've led it to where it is, and that's great. But it needs a proper superstar dropped in, I think, now. All of that, plus, like you say, it's not just Ducati's adding Marc Marquez. Ducati's got this sort of backlog of great bikes now, and because they've got the split in specs, if it's logically, its 2024 bike should be an improvement over what it's got. If it has any stumbles with that, it's got a bunch of 23 bikes sat there with some very good riders on them that will probably still be better than anything anyone's come up with for 2024. So it's got, through sheer numbers as well, it's got everything in its hands to keep on winning and winning and winning. Now, in 2025, I can see Ducati getting a bit weaker because there is this sort of chaos element, like you say. There's Marc Marquez in the mix. Who's going to get frustrated or annoyed or unsettled by that? We've got Jorge Martin seemingly with every reason to walk out on Ducati despite all they've achieved together, and where he ends up will get a very fast rider straight away. So I think 2024 is going to be an absolutely phenomenal season, but I think up front it's going to be an all Ducati tale. The subplots will be how much progress Yamaha, Honda make, and how the rider lineup changes work out there. The other subplot will be the 2025 rider market. But the storyline I really want to see is just how this Marquez versus Bagnaia versus Bezzecchi versus maybe Bastianini, if my faith is justified, how all that works out across those three four main Ducati teams. I didn't even mention Jorge Martin. Yeah, basically, Ducati's full of potential title winners, and it's got a million great bikes. It's going to give us an amazing storyline this season that I hope will be fraught and extremely clickable and listen-to-able for podcast listeners as well. But it's going to win a lot of races in that time. I absolutely loved 2023, and I didn't even realize the Ducati win percentage was as high as 85% until I actually looked at it afterwards. It didn't necessarily feel like that in the moment because the intra-brand battling, because it was across Pramac versus Works and VR46 as well, really, was so strong. So, yeah. Ducati, again, thank you for, okay, filling over a third of the grid, but letting them get on with fighting each other, because you've done us all a massive favour there. We could have been very, very, very bored by now if you hadn't taken that risk.
I mean, it probably is a controversial thing to say, but even if it's 100%, that still could be quite a good season, as this season has showed. But I do find it slightly incongruent that I'm the person who was most vociferously suggesting that Pedro Costa won't win a race in 2024. Yet now that we're talking about how many non-Ducatis will win races, it's me who's giving the biggest number, and everyone else is like, they'll be lucky if they finish sixth in Termas or something.
Well, I think if you look across our whole body of work across the podcast, across the columns and the rankings and the 2024 lineups ranked, if you're looking for consistency of opinion, you're looking at the wrong pundits. In fairness, you know, we'll argue what crosses our mind at the time, and we will die on those hills that we construct for ourselves. But they may be a different hill the following week. And
fair point, well made.
Do I care? Yeah, it's we're here to entertain and inform, but
I care a lot. Keeps me up at night.
Yeah. Val just hasn't considered the possibility that I think that the remaining 10% or 20% of MotoGP races next season is going to be won by Pedro Acosta.
All of them.
I have considered that, and I ruled it out because I do not believe you. I don't believe that.
So we will return to these predictions at the end of 2024 and see how wide of the mark they obviously all will be. And this is just the warm-up when we predict the 2025 grid, which is already going to be my favorite January podcast and will be coming up very soon. We also have our chat with Dan Rossomondo, the Dorna commercial chief, and we put your questions to him about all things MotoGP, fan appeal, growth. We've got a few more questions of our own to debate on that front as well. Will we get more manufacturers? Will our Grand Prix ticket prices right? What's going on with TV? We love MotoGP. We love what it delivered in 2023. We are so excited for what it could deliver in 2024. Are enough people seeing it? Are enough people believing in it? What can be changed there? That'll be the subject of one of our January episodes as well. So we hope we have quite a lot for you to look forward to even before pre-season testing begins. I'm going to say Happy New Year again. I assume we all had a fantastic Christmas and New Year because this podcast is happening in 2024. That's all happened. You know, 2024 is great. We're loving it so far. Thank you for your time in 2023, 2024 and 2025, listeners. We'll be back in your ears very, very soon.
The Athletic.